Welcome to your GCSE English Literature Revision Podcast. I'm your study guide, and today we're diving deep into one of the most rewarding texts on the specification, Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. Whether you're sitting AQA, EdXL, or OCR, this novella appears as a 19th century prose text, and it's genuinely one of the most exam-friendly texts you'll study. Why? Because Dickens gives you so much to work with: rich language, powerful symbolism, a clear character arc, and a social message that still resonates today. In the next 10 minutes, we're going to cover the core concepts you need, the exam tips that will push you into the top mark bands, a quick-fire quiz to test your recall, and a summary to take away. So grab a pen, get comfortable, and let's get into it. Let's start with what the novella is actually about. And I don't mean the plot, I mean what Dickens is really doing. A Christmas Carol, published in 1843, is a moral fable. Dickens wrote it in just 6 weeks, partly because he was furious about a government report on child labor in mines and factories. He wanted to shake the conscience of wealthy Victorians, and he chose the form of a Christmas story to do it because Christmas, for Dickens, represented everything that was good about human connection: generosity, family, compassion. The novella is structured in 5 staves. Dickens deliberately uses the word stave rather than chapter because a stave is a verse of a song. The whole text is a carol, a song of redemption. That's your first structural point for AO2 right there. Now, Scrooge. Ebenezer. Scrooge is introduced as, and I quote, "a squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner." Notice the accumulation of present participles there. That list of 6 verbs ending in ing creates a relentless, suffocating effect. Dickens piles them up to overwhelm the reader, just as Scrooge's greed overwhelms everything around him. That's AO2 analysis. Identify the technique, name it, explain the effect. Scrooge's transformation is the heart of the novella. He moves from isolation to compassion, from greed to generosity. But here's a key point that many candidates miss. Dickens doesn't present this transformation as easy or automatic. Each ghost serves a specific psychological function. The ghost of Christmas past forces Scrooge to confront the emotional wounds that made him who he is: his lonely childhood, his lost love, Belle, his rejection of warmth. The ghost of Christmas present shows him the joy he is missing and the suffering he is causing, particularly through the Cratchit family and the 2 allegorical children, ignorance and want. And the ghost of Christmas yet to come confronts him with the ultimate consequence: a lonely, unmourned death. Let's talk about those allegorical children for a moment, because they're a gift in the exam. When the ghost of Christmas present reveals 2 wretched children hidden beneath his robe, he says, "This boy is ignorance, this girl is want. Beware them both and all of their degree, but most of all, beware this boy." The capital letters signal allegory. These are not real children. They are symbolic. Ignorance represents the willful blindness of the wealthy to the suffering of the poor. Want represents the desperate poverty of the working class. And Dickens warns most against ignorance because it is the choice not to see, not to know, that perpetuates injustice. This is Dickens at his most politically direct, and examiners absolutely reward candidates who can connect this to Victorian context, specipically the New Poor Law of 1834, which forced the destitute into workhouses, and the Malthusian view that the poor were responsible for their own suffering. Now the Cratchit family. Bob Cratchit earns 15 shillings a week, barely enough to survive. Dickens presents the family not with pity, but with warmth and dignity. Their Christmas dinner is modest, a small pudding, but their joy is abundant. This contrast is deliberate. Dickens is showing that happiness is not found in wealth. Tiny Tim is the most powerful symbol in this section. His phrase, "God bless us, everyone," is both a prayer and a challenge to the reader. The word "every" is inclusive. It encompasses even Scrooge, even the wealthy who have turned their backs on the poor. And the threat of his death, shown by the ghost of Christmas yet to come, is what finally breaks through Scrooge's defenses. Let's also consider narrative voice. Dickens uses a first-person narrator who directly addresses the reader. "You will therefore permit me to repeat, emphatically, that Marley was as dead as a doornail." This creates intimacy and draws the reader into a shared moral journey. The narrator is warm, ironic, and morally engaged, very different from Scrooge himself. This contrast between narrator and protagonist is itself a technique worth discussing. Right, exam tips, let's be really practical here. The most common mistake I see is what examiners call feature spotting. A candidate writes, "Dickens uses a metaphor here, full stop. No analysis of what the metaphor does, no exploration of its effect on the reader, no link to context or theme. That gets you level 2 at best. To reach level 4, the top band, you need to explore the effect of the technique and link it to Dickens' wider purpose. Here's the formula. Name the technique, quote it precisely, analyze the effect on the reader, link to context or theme. For example, the metaphor of Marley's chain, "I wear the chain I forged in life," presents greed as a form of self-imprisonment. The verb forged suggests active agency. Marley chose this fate, link by link, just as Scrooge is choosing his. Dickens uses this to warn Victorian readers that moral choices have eternal consequences, reflecting a Christian framework of sin and redemption. See how that paragraph does so much more than just identify a metaphor? It analyses, it contextualizes, it argues. Second tip, embed your quotations. Don't write, "Dickens says," quote, "squeezing, wrenching, grasping. This shows Scrooge is greedy." Instead, write, "Dickens' accumulation of present participles, squeezing, wrenching, grasping, creates a suffocating portrait of greed." The quotation is woven into your sentence. That's what examiners mean by judicious use of textual evidence. Third tip, don't forget AO4, that's 4 marks for spelling, punctuation, and grammar. Use a range of sentence structures. Spell literary terms correctly, metaphor, allegory, foreshadowing, and vary your vocabulary. Those 4 marks can be the difference between a grade 6 and a grade 7. Finally, plan before you write. 5 minutes of planning saves you from going off topic. Jot down your 3 or 4 main points, the quotes you'll use, and the context you'll weave in. Examiners can tell when a response is planned. It has a coherent argument, not just a list of points. Okay, quick fire quiz. I'll ask the question, pause, then give the answer. Cover your notes if you can. Question 1. What does Marley's chain symbolize? The chain symbolizes the consequences of a life devoted to greed and selfishness. Each link represents a moral failing. Question 2. Name the 2 allegorical children and what they represent. Ignorance and want. Ignorance represents the willful blindness of the wealthy. Want represents the poverty of the working class. Question 3. What does the word stave in the chapter title suggest about the novella's form? It suggests the novella is structured like a song, a carol, reinforcing the Christmas theme and the idea of a moral message delivered through storytelling. Question 4. What is Tiny Tim's famous line, and why is the word every significant? God bless us, everyone. The word every is inclusive, suggesting that redemption and compassion must extend to all of society, including the wealthy. Let's bring it all together. A Christmas Carol is a moral fable about redemption, social responsibility, and the transformative power of compassion. Dickens uses the supernatural framework of the 3 ghosts to take Scrooge and the reader on a psychological and moral journey through past, present, and future. The key things to remember for your exam: analyze language at word level, not just technique level. Integrate context, the poor law, Malthusian views, Victorian attitudes to poverty, into your analysis, not as a separate paragraph. Use embedded quotations, and always link your points back to Dickens' authorial purpose. He is writing to change minds, to stir consciences, to make wealthy Victorians feel the weight of their indifference. You've got this. Keep practicing, keep reading your quotes, and remember, every paragraph is a chance to show the examiner what you know and how brilliantly you can think. Good luck, and I'll see you in the next episode.